Imagine you're running a PLC in your industry application, and some attacker comes along, twiddles a bit with your I/O controller, and you have no chance of noticing anything. This sounds a bit like a bad horror story, but our next speakers will tell you that this is not just a story, it's real. Please give a warm round of applause to Ali Abbasi and Majid.
Thanks. Hi, everybody. Welcome to our talk. It's this modification of programmable logic controllers I/O by pin control attack. My name is Ali Abbasi, and I am a PhD student at Distributed and Embedded System Security Group at University of Twente in the Netherlands, and visiting researcher at Chair of System Security of Ruhr University Bochum in Germany right now, and my colleague.
And I am Majid. I'm a research and development engineer. I studied computer science and I have my master in artificial intelligence. My main area of research is reverse engineering, and I involve in system level security of the PLCs and SCADA networks with Ali lately.
All right. Actually, when I was in, I came here, I saw this picture, which was saying choose your side. After trying this, I have to say I choose Cloud Matter. Okay, so first we start with giving you a background on process control and some other background on existing active attacks and defenses against PLCs. This is very essential for our attack because it describes why we are doing our attack. Then it makes sense when you are assuming that you have active defenses. We will also look at which one of these defenses generally for embedded system can be applied for PLCs. Then we will give you the core part, the background on pin control, and what is the problem with the pin control. We'll introduce our rootkit variant of our attack and non-rootkit variants, and we'll have some demos for videos, actually, and discussions. So, again, before we start, because there was lots of media hype about our work, so I want to clarify things that what is this talk about. First of all, we only want to uncover existing design flaws in PLCs, and we believe that the attack can be used in future by attackers, assuming that you have active defenses within the PLCs.
And of course, this is not a new generation of a Stuxnet. So we are not going to unveil any fully functional rootkits, just a single binary that you can run it everywhere, no matter what is the operating system or underlying architecture of the device. This is also not about any exploitation technique or any vulnerability discovery technique. And also, we are not going to mention any vendor name, so no names and shames. First of all, we are going to start to give you a basic overview about industrial control system networks. So, generally, ICS networks consist of three main parts. The first one is the IT technology. This is your corporate LAN, where you have the Active Directory, your mail server, the file sharing server. And this is in this area of the network that you have the workstation. It's where the users are surfing web, downloading files, and executing them. Then the next part is operational technology, or OT. This is our SCADA network part. This is where we have the SCADA systems and the PLCs. And finally, we have the physical application layer. This is where we have like our physical elements of our network, like the sensors, the gates, the valves, and the ports. And it's interesting to know that this part of network is controlled and monitored by the operational technology, actually by the SCADA network part. And when an attacker trying to attack an industrial network, the final goal could be to affect and cause damage to the physical application. To get a better understanding of this kind of attack, it's important to understand the process control. One of the simplest examples of the process control could be a thermostat. So, back into the old days, when you wanted to increase or decrease the temperature of your room, you should do it manually. But these days, you can get a thermostat configure it once to your desired value, and then it's the thermostat that will do the job for you to increase or decrease the temperature. The control loop in a thermostat starts by reading a value from a temperature sensor. This value then goes an input to the control system, and this is in this particular part where the thermostat is going to make decision about what to do next, like what to increase or decrease the temperature. And then the result of this going as a command to your physical process, which could be your heating system, and this loop will continue over and over. The things are, like, in a larger scale, the things are much more complex than a simple thermostat. So that's why we're using the PLCs. The PLC, or programmable logic controller, is one of the main components of every ICS network. The PLCs are simply embedded devices running a real-time operating system, and they're programmed using logics. So the logic is simply a program that the PLC executes, and it will make the PLC to actually do something. And it will define the rules that what the PLC should or should not do. And as you can see, a few simple examples about the logic, and like if the input from the IO1 and the input of 2 and 11 or something, then it will update some output on port 6, and the other examples. So let's take a look at how a PLC with a logic can do. We're going to stick still with our temperature example. So we have still our temperature sensor. And then the PLC, actually the logic inside the PLC, it will read a value from it, from the sensor. It will make the decision based on that input. And as a result, it will update some output to the physical I.O. But, you know, some small changes in the temperature of your room may not make any problem to you, but this small change could pose a real threat, could be really dangerous into industrial network. That's why we are using the control algorithms. This kind of algorithm is to calculate the risk of some operation. For example, let's imagine that if in your logic you have defined that the temperature should not go higher than 20, and if in the last iteration of the control loop, the temperature is something like 19.95, here by this kind of algorithm, for example with PID, we are going to calculate what will happen if the loop turns once more, and should we just halt the process right now, or it's not really dangerous, so we can let the loop to turn once more. Okay, now that we have some basic understanding about the ICS network, I'm going to give you some introduction about the attacks and defenses against embedded systems. Okay, so one of the simplest attacks against almost the PLCs and embedded devices is the authentication bypass. It is so dumb because it's the story of the default passwords. It's so easy to change it and like to be protected against it, but unfortunately we're seeing it almost like it's really general, it's really common. Then we have the firmware or logic modification, when the attacker can take a firmware image, do some modification, and then upload the malicious firmware to the device. As well, the attackers can do the same thing with the logic. They can manipulate the logic and then upload the malicious logic to the device as well. The another class of attack here is the control flow attacks, which exists since a long time on the PCs, and like the buffer overflow, the remote code executions, and there exists as well on embedded devices and the PLCs. The last but not least kind of attack are the ICS malwares. One of the good examples about this attack is Stuxnet, where the malware trying to attack the SCADA software by installing some hooks and trying to manipulate the process that way. So to be protected against those attacks, we have some defensive solutions as well. The attestation or memory attestation is one of those solutions. In this technique, in this method, we are trying to check integrity of a state of the system, for example, the memory. Then we have the firmware integrity verification, which can be used for the logic as well, which before installing a new logic or new firmware, the system should verify that the firmware or the logics are actually coming from a trusted source. And then we have more sophisticated protections. Actually, they're mostly host-based intrusion detection systems for detecting the hooks and control flow anomalies. So from all those defense, there are not all of them are actually applicable to the PLCs, because you know the proposed solution should not require any hardware modification. And since we have a very limited amount of resource on these devices, so the proposed solution also not should not pose any extra overhead to the device. And because like almost all of the already manufactured PLCs are not supporting virtualization, and based on what they're doing, it's very unlikely to see the virtualization support in the future manufactured PLCs. So all the solutions which require the virtualizations are eliminated as well. So here we can divide the defensive solutions in two categories. In the first category, we can put logic checksum and firmware integrity verification as a trivial defense. And we can put, like we have another category, is host-based intrusion detection systems, which doppelganger and otoscopy JRs are two good examples in this category. So we're going to take a deeper look at these two protections. The doppelganger actually used the attestation method, which it takes a firmware image, it has scanned that firmware image for the executable code, and it will randomly install some symbiotes or watch points. And at the runtime, every time that these watch points are hit, it will check integrity of the memory region, and as far as that this checksum and the integrity of that memory is not changed, it will consider that everything is fine. Then we have the otoscopy JR. The otoscopy JR is a defense against the control flow anomalies. It has two different phases. In the first step, which is called learning mode, it tries to gather some information about the execution of the and like the function address, the function parameters, the return address, and it will store all of them in a TTL or trusted location list. And later in the protection mode, it will actually compare all the runtime information against this static list, against a TTLL, and as far as these two values are matching, it will consider that everything is fine. So, these two solutions try to protect the device against code hooking and data manipulation. But what the pupils didn't thought that you know not all the rootkits or all the attacks is about to do the modification in the codes or in the memory. For example, we use debug registers to just blocking the access and monitor or hijacking access to some values into the memory. We use debug registers, as I said. This technique has been documented in Frag magazine by Halfdead long ago. And well, if you're interested, you can go and take a look. It's really interesting. So now Ali going to give you some information about the pin control and actually introducing our attack.
Okay. So you might ask why we gave you lots of background on active defenses for the PLCs. Is because our attack much more makes sense when you consider you have active defenses within the PLC, which vendors right now are trying to push their products toward that. I think first PLCs with active defenses, you will see it in 2020 or maybe earlier. So what is pin control? Well, generally, pin control or pin control subsystem consists of two parts. First, pin multiplexing, which means that a single pin, and I mean real pin, in a SoC or CPU, can have multiple functionalities, which you can use it at once. You can only use one of those functionalities at once. And they do it because the chip vendor gives these SoCs to different other companies, for example, mobile like companies, the companies which make cell phones, but the chip developer is somebody else. So what they do is that they put several functionalities in different pins, so based on different requirements for different companies which are using it, it can be used literally for their own purposes, while you can have a general chip for different companies. And that's what they call as pin multiplexing. And it's like a complexing in chip designing and stuff. And another thing in pin control is pin configuration, which literally means that you are configuring digital I/O pins and describing how they are going to be used. So is it an input pin or output pin? And remember that because we are going to use it a lot. So there are general rules about these pins. And again, you need to remember that before we move forward, is that in an input pin, or a pin which you, for example, use to read values, you can only use it as a read-only pin. So it means that you can never write to a pin which is described as input. Okay? So general rule. And if it's an output pin, which means that you are controlling some devices with it, then you can read to it, sorry, read from it and write to it too. So it's like you can have both things in an output pin. General rule. So for example, here is an example logic, as you can see. We have a pin 24 as input, DW in, and then we have a pin 22 as output, or in the down, you can see the same configuration. So now we have to know actually how actually PLC interacting with these pins. And before I start, I want to again, like just remind you again, Majid already said it, but like, so in a PLC, you have a main application, which is called runtime. It's usually don't change except by a framework update. And then you have another part of the application, which the operators in the power plants or in like critical infrastructure program, and that's why you call a PLC programmable, which we call it logic. It's a program which you, for example, describe if the temperature of the input blah is more than this, then do that. So that's like logic. So the PLC runtime, usually what will happen is that either the PLC runtime, which can be a driver, that like mapping these IO addresses for the physical memory and then interact with it. But let's look at it in a more accurate way. And why it is a problem which we call as a memory illusion. So let's assume that we have a PLC runtime running in a real-time operating system, a modern real-time operating system, and you have a physical I/O memory available there. And then what will happen is that PLC runtime requests, or it can be a driver, it requests for I/O memory of this physical memory, which is going to be used to be controlled. It asks the operating system map this I/O memory in a virtual I/O memory. And then there is an operator who is programming the PLC, and he say, okay, so I want you to do this and that and that. And it upload it to the PLC, which call it logic, right? So for example, in this example, we have a logic which we say, if pin 24 is true, then every 5 seconds, turn on and off the pin 22. So here in this example, we can immediately notice that pin 24 is an input pin, because we are always checking if it's true. And we are updating pin 22, which means pin 22 is output pin. What will happen is that the PLC runtime then literally notice about this description and then request to change the state of the pins in a virtually mapped I/O, in a something which we call it register, a state register of the SoC, in a virtually mapped I/O, of course. So for example, it describes, say, hey, pin 24, is an input. So the state of it is zero means that it's an input pin, and pin 22 is output, so I write value, for example, one, which means that the pin is output pin. And then, well, this value will get written to the physical memory, and then, based on our logic, we are going to read the values from pin 24, because if pin 24 is true, then we can continue with the pin 22. So we will read it from virtual memory, but actually it's coming from the physical memory. And then, every 5 seconds, the PLC runtime will request to write the value 0 or 1 to the virtual memory, which means that you are going to turn on and off something which is connected, let's say, a LED, every 5 seconds. So that's something that is happening every 5 seconds. And of course, the read happens all the time. But what is the problem with the pin control is that what if, that's what we assume, what if there is an attacker who, without PLC knowing, or, well, PLC never know, just requests normally that, hey, I have a new configuration for the pin 22 which I'm going to use. So now I change the state of the pin 22 from an output pin to an input pin. So remember, pin 22 was output pin because you are writing to it every 5 seconds. But I am writing in a different register, in a SoC register, that, hey, pin 22 from now on is an input. And of course, this value gets written to the virtual memory and then in a physical memory. What will happen next is interesting, because the PLC runtime then it's assumed that every 5 seconds it have to turn on and off the LED, right? So it's still try to write 0 and 1 every 5 seconds to the write register. So turn on and off the LED. But what will happen is, here's a core problem, that, well, you can't write to it. Do you remember the general rule? A pin which is input, you cannot write to it, okay? And the problem is that the CPU or the SoC, in like almost all embedded systems, they don't give you a feedback that, hey, you cannot write to it. So it's like everything looks fine. This is what we call as a pin configuration attack, because you can just change the configuration. I will explain again later too. But let's change it. So we also have another register, which we call it multiplexing register, okay? So I just changed the name of the state register to multiplex register. And then what will happen is that I'm going to say, hey, pin 20, for example, let's say it was connected to a motor, so it's not a GPIO, it's a I2C port, SPI, or PWM port, okay? So let's say now I'm going to change it, so the logic is not anymore LED. Let's say we have a motor which we are controlling. What I'm going to do as an attacker is that I'm going to say, hey, multiplex pin 22 from I2C or PWM pin to a GPIO or something else, okay? And what will happen is that, well, these are the old values, doesn't matter. Here, every 5 seconds, PLC runtime tries to write, but it can't write because, well, you physically terminated the connection of the I/O by multiplexing the pin which was being used before. And that's a problem because let's give you an example like a USB drive in Windows. Okay, so you are copying your files and then suddenly you take out your USB. What do you expect? There is an error saying, boom, like this device is not anymore available, so you can't copy it. What is happening now is that with, for example, pin multiplexing specifically, is that you're actually, the I/O is not anymore available, but the virtual memory of the I/O is still available. So the operating system and the PLC runtime is still talking with the virtual I/O, but this value cannot get written to the physical memory. But there is no feedback from the SoC to tell the PLC runtime or the operating system that, hey, this I/O is not anymore available. And that's how the problem happens. So Majid, I think, we just show you a quick demo about how it's working. Hope it's not cracking. Yeah, cool. Let's start from beginning. Yes. So we have, for example, an example process here that we say, for example, pin 25 is an input and pin 23 is the output, and every 5 seconds I want to turn on and off the LED connected to pin 23. And you can see the LED turning on and off every 5 seconds. Okay, we are using a real PLC runtime being used in more than 260 PLC vendors right now. And so as you can see, the value gets false, it means the LED is off. The value shows true, it means that the LED is on. So when it's true, LED is on. When it's false, LED is off, okay? And then what we are doing, exactly what we described now. So we are going to manipulate the configuration of the pin. When the pin is, for example, in an output, we change it to input. But we don't want to change the process, the actual operations happening here. We just want to show you that there is no failure, there is no I/O failure, the PLC runtime doesn't fail, there is no error in the kernel, we did the kernel debugging on it, but there is no error at all. It's like everything looking fine. So faster? Orange.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's an important thing. So we don't hook any functions in here because we assume that we have some active defenses. So you still have the LED turning on and off, and what we are going to do. Right now, we are only blocking the operation. So we want to see every time PLC runtime want to try to write to a IO pin, we change the state of the pin related to the LED from output to input. So the IO is only read-only. It's not anymore, you can't write to a pin anymore. And then you see that the PLC runtime assumes that everything is fine and nothing happens. In the next demo, we will show you later that actually we changed the process, the actual process happening too. Yeah, so here, so now we just want to show you that we are intercepting the write operation of the runtime. Every time it's trying to write to the IO. And you can see LED is not anymore flashing, but the PLC runtime doesn't know about it. So once you can see, we switch now to the SCADA software, to the programmer station, and then what we do here, the PLC is still saying true five seconds, and then false 5 seconds. So for example, again, it's going true, but the LED is not turning on anymore because we are actually changing the state of the pin from output to input every time PLC runtime tries to write to it. All right. So that was the problem, actually. Everybody, like, well, at the beginning, we were assuming that there must be a termination or something because the IO is not available, for example, or the configuration. We change the configuration, and there is some error, kind of error there, but nothing happens. And I think the original problem is the no interrupt for pin configuration, first of all, so the PLC runtime or the operating system knows that there is a change in the configuration of the pin or multiplexing features. And the second problem is that there is no feedback after, once there is a failure, that, hey, you couldn't write to it. So the SoC doesn't tell you because there is no interrupt for it either. And I don't know if it's possible to put an interrupt because it's very expensive. So what we did was that we decided to create attack using pin control attack, assuming that we have these kind of active defenses currently available for PLCs. And we didn't want to do function hooking, for example, because as Majid said, we have some active protections such as Autoscopy JR, which are looking actively for function hooking within the PLC. Okay, so, and of course, we don't want to modify the executable content of the PLC because some companies, for example, can enforce like attestation frameworks which verify the static part of the PLC runtime that is not modified. And again, we assume that you have other active defenses. For example, you have a logic checksum. So if somebody do the manipulation of the logic, we can detect it. That's how we have pin control attack, which is, well, we manipulate the IO configuration, which, for example, a configuration of the pins, if it's input or output, we call it pin configuration attack. And in another way, we do pin multiplexing attack, which means that we are changing the multiplexing configuration of the SoC. And of course, the OS never knows about it. So we implemented in two variants. First variant was a rootkit. Require root privilege, some knowledge of SoC registers, and the knowledge of mapping between IO pins and the logic. And second variant was as a shellcode. So how actually the attack works? So let's assume that we want to a PLC runtime trying to write to a specific pin, and we want to manipulate the values in a specific pin. So what we do is that we use the debug registers, and we put the virtually mapped IO into the debug register. And then the PLC runtime tries to write to it. But because we already put it into the debug register, so we intercept the write operation. What we do is that we don't modify the write operation. We don't divert its execution flow or anything. What we do is that we just go to another register, which is a state register, and change the configuration of the pin, which is the PLC runtime we know is going to write to it. We change it to the input pin, and the PLC runtime write to it, but it doesn't work because, well, you can't write to an input pin. And of course, for the read manipulation, what you can do is that you can actually, again, put the IO addresses into the debug register, the virtually mapped IO, and then the PLC runtime tries to read it, we intercept it, then what we do is that we change the pin from input to output, so it's like quite opposite. And then we write the value we want you see. So for example, if you are reading a, I don't know, temperature value, I'm just like going to change the value I want you read. And then I let you continue reading. And what will happen is that you read the value I tell you, not the actual value is happening. So for the next demo, actually, we have two other demos right now we show, and then there is a third one. The fourth one. Okay, so what we have is that we have the same logic as we described, so except that every, for example, 4 seconds, we want to turn on and off a LED. But this time, we want to actually do the attack. So we want to change what's actually happening there. So it's not just blocking something. We want to actually change it the same way as described in the previous page. So we have a LED which is connected to a pin, and then we want to turn on and off it every 4 seconds. But me, as an attacker, I don't want it every 4 seconds because I want to do it every 1 second. Okay? So now, this was the logic we are going to use for the next demo. And then there was some people were saying that, well, what you implemented was in a not in a real PLC because you were doing the SoCs from the Raspberry Pi BCM2836 to do the attack using a PLC runtime. So maybe in the actual PLC is different. So because we wanted to answer that, we actually implemented in a real PLC as well. So it's like the logic we have in a real PLC. We just, I think, covered the name and stuff, but smart people will find what is it. So this was the first test bed we have, which you saw a video of it, and this was the second PLC.
Tweet the vendor name if you know it.
Yeah, so in the next demo, we are actually changing the actual physical process without PLC runtime nodes. All right, so what we have is that every 4 seconds, we are turning on and off the LED. So you can see true there, and then the LED is on. So true, LED is on, and false means LED is off. And then we execute our attack. And we are now changing the process. What is happening there is that still runtime assuming that is true for 4 seconds, and 4 seconds false. But actually, it's not happening in the physical process. And the operator, when they are seeing it, so assuming that in an industrial plant, what is happening is look like the Black Hat movie, but it's a more complex one. So the next, we do it in a real PLC as well. We just covered the names and everywhere the name of the PLC vendor. What we do is that, so we are turning on and off LED. So you can see every 2-3 seconds, we are changing it. We had to put a thing in the screen too. You can see LEDs on and off, and then we kick in our attack. Look, this implementation is a known rootkit variant. So we are actually not using kernel access or anything else. We are just actually from user space, we are executing this attack. Thanks for Andre, if you are watching, that he made this video for us. It takes some second to kick in the attack. So then, for example, we make decision. We want to turn off the LED without PLC runtime knows about it, okay? So PLC runtime, you can see the true value there and false value, but actually I decided that the LED have to be stopped, so the LED is stopped. It's not turning on, okay? Now I decide that the LED can blink, then it can blink. And then I decide, no, stop anymore, but the value is true there, but the LED is not true, okay? So it's like, every time I make a decision to stop the LED from doing whatever it's doing without the application, and the OS knows about it. And so that's how it's working. I have to drink this thing that I don't like. And there is no IO failure or anything happening here. So there is, in the logs, you don't find anything. You just decide that the LED must stop, even if the PLC runtime, assuming that is true, LED is not on, but because we make decision that the LED must be stopped, it's a stop. So it's like, so the problem is that what actual operators see in the physical plant is completely different with what actually happening. Okay, and that's a problem. That's the core problem here, that the operator sees something else, but actual physical process will be something different. Majid, you want to have to continue?
Yeah. So Ali did another presentation yesterday about the security and how good the embedded devices are in the term of the mitigations and randomized numbers. During our research, we analyzed different binaries from different vendors, and these binaries are weren't protected, not with the exploit mitigations, at least not correctly, and not against static or dynamic analysis. But one of the vendor has it was quite surprising for us to see that the binary was protected against the static analysis, and it was simply packed, very simple technique that, you know, like 99% of the file was packed, and it was just few functions, simple loop that was unpacking the file into the memory and do the final jump. The same vendor used an simple anti-debugging trick as well, which the parent process was attaching to the child process to block the other debuggers to attach. These are not really new techniques. There are many bypasses are already available on the internet, but it was quite surprising for us to see them on the PLCs actually. During our research, because we knew after a while we knew what kind of information we are looking for, so we decided to use strace. And the only challenge we had using strace was that because we had really limited amount of resource on the PLCs, and strace was generating huge amount of output, we wasn't able to handle that output, and the PLC was crashing like. Simply. So what we did, we used a slightly modified version of strace to just gather the information that we need. And it was easy to exploit those information as well. So if you remember those two protections that I introduced in the beginning of this presentation, those protections, like the others, there are some ways to bypass them. Like, because Doppelganger is not not monitoring the dynamic memory, so if you have any malicious code which loaded dynamically, the Doppelganger is evaded. And because Autoscope EJR actually comparing the runtime information against the static list, which it was gathered at the learning mode, and if there is an attack in some part of the system which wasn't monitored in the first step, so we can evade the Autoscope EJR as well. And again, in our attack, we do not modify any firmware or any logic. So now Ali is going to tell us about the overhead of our attack.
Yeah, so with the rootkit variants, this is the graph for the fluctuation of the I/O. So how much I/O fluctuates when you are doing the attack. Of course, we are doing it some extra work in a PLC, so there might be a fluctuation of the I/O. And it's like around 0.05 milliseconds extra, or like 1 millisecond extra. The thing is that the fluctuation of I/O, surprisingly, and I don't know why, is less than actual PLC runtime. And that's weird. Yes. And so we evaluated the overhead of our attack, and it was not good, especially for read manipulation. So because we wanted not only change the operation, but we wanted to also operator never see what's happening. Okay, so we wanted to, because, well, in a process, it's like a closed loop control. So it's like once you change something there, the inputs which is coming back is changed too. So we didn't want the operator see it. So we were doing the manipulation, but the manipulation, especially for read manipulation, was not at all acceptable. It was like a 22-23% overhead. And that was too much for us. So what we did was that we thought about why we don't do it without having roots, without using debug registers, because that was like expensive. So that's why we implemented a second variant of our attack. So what we did was that we thought about, okay, PLC runtime, once it received the logic, it's configured the pins, or like it's describing lots of things for its operation. So why not we just use the privilege of the PLC runtime and do the same? And we did it, and its overhead is like below 1%. We can either remap the I/O or use already mapped I/O addresses. And it works as a shellcode. You can actually use in any standard like CZFS or like DevMem or device driver request to actually change the configuration of attack. And how it's working, and especially the most important thing is something, the difference with the previous attack with the rootkit, is that The only thing you need is that you need to find something, we call it reference starting time. So let's assume that we are turning on and off a simple process like LED every 5 seconds. But what we want is that we have to know from which 5 seconds, it's like from which point this 5 seconds starts. Okay, so I know that if it's starting, it's every 5 seconds it's doing, but at which moment this 5 seconds happening? So that's something that you have to read for some seconds the I/O pins and then knows what is this delay or at which certain exact time it's happening. And then once you found it, actually the work is almost similar. So you just set the pin to the input mode, the write get ignored, and then you PLC runtime write to it, well it fail, and then we change back its pin to something else, and then we write the value which we want. It's similar to the read values too. So we find the reference starting time, we set the pin to the output mode, then we write our value we want, and then PLC runtime read the value we give to them. And so far, all of the things we said was about digital stuff, right? And almost all of them about pin configuration. So the question is, what about analog stuff, and what about pin multiplexing, which we physically terminate the connection? So actually, we can actually use it for analog manipulation. It's very good. So we can actually use the pin multiplexing attack to manipulate the entire analog memory and like suddenly make it unavailable for the PLC runtime or the driver. And then later, we return it back to control. So you can do it. That's one of the things you can do. Or you can just be very intrusive and change the program counter to, well, it's intrusive, but you can change the program counter to jump from the write operation. But generally, the I/O, analog I/O is almost the same as physical digital. So it's except that you have multiple bits to modify. So now we have our last demo, which is analog manipulation of a motor. And we are doing it via pin multiplexing attack. I have to go very slowly, just stop it 1 second. Because, so there is a motor which is rotating every, like, some seconds, right? And here is good. So here, this value here you see, the minus 0.0329, and if you look at this value, it's going high and then go low. This is a sinus wave which we have. So it's like it's going high and then it's going low, right? So it's showing us that how we are actually controlling the motor. And now the motor is actually working and rotating based on that. So now we are kicking our attack via pin multiplexing. What we do is that we decide to stop the motor whenever we want in analog data. And we kick in our loader, and then what will happen is that we stop the motor, but still what you see there is actually the motor is moving forward and backward. But actually, it's not the case, because the motor is not moving forward and backward. As you can see, motor is stopped. So let me go back a little bit here. So again, the motor is moving, we load our attack, motor is stopped from working, but there the values are still saying that the motor is moving forward and backward, but actually motor is not moving forward and backward, because actually we multiplex the pin, we physically terminate it. But the runtime, there is no I/O failure, there is nothing from the driver ever. Crazy. So there might be other possibilities about the attack. So some other smart people can look at it. That, like, for example, pull up and pull down resistors. It's worth looking at them. What if we disable them? And is it possible that somebody remotely changed the values of the I/O via electromagnetic field? I don't know. You know about pull up, pull down resistor. There is certain resistor which you want to filter the noises coming from the environment. But you can actually, in the SoC, disable them. I don't know why they put this functionality, but overall, what we believe is that you can, again, cannot trust your inputs, even if it's coming from the I/O. And what we believe now is that for now, actually, to be honest, I think it doesn't make sense to do our attack. You know why? Because, well, there are so much simpler things to do right now, which, well, lots of vulnerable PLCs, which do not have like basic stuff, like I don't know, like not having backdoor password, or like there is no attestation frameworks for executable part of the memory. But the vendors right now, as we are speaking, they are actually moving toward that. And our talk is not about today, it's about once they are deploying, seeing probably in 2020, then this attack makes sense for them. And so for now, fixing these problems, and I think it's easy for the vendors to fix this problem. So having not having the backdoor password, having proper logic checksum, or like having some kind of attestation for verifying the integrity of the PLC runtime. But once these things are gone, then the next step for attacker is actually modifying the logic or runtime, like without hooking functions, which is very typical in malware. So that's why every time when you have like more active defenses in one layer, attackers go to another layer. And I think our attack is in another layer. And so, as a conclusion, I think we really need to focus on system-level security of control devices in future, because more sophisticated techniques comes. Because right now we don't have very good defenses, doesn't mean that once we have them, the attackers don't introduce something new. It's always a cat and mouse game. And so the pin control attack is just an example of such attacks. And I think that originally it's caused by lack of interrupt for I/O configuration register, and can have actually significant consequences in other control devices, such as IEDs or even ECUs. And that's it. Najit, you have a solution for us?
No. Well, before being worried about this kind of attacks, it's better to first change your default passwords, right? And then it's actually hard to give a definitive solution right now, because to having a good solution against this kind of attacks need a equal collaboration from the software vendors and the hardware vendors. But we can do some stuff to make it harder. For example, doing the I/O separation and not letting the unprivileged process to do directly the I/O operations. And we can also do monitor the IOs and the pins for the anomalies, for example, in the kernel. So by doing this kind of stuff, we can reduce the attack surface. And yeah, this is almost pretty about our presentation. If you're looking for more, you can attend at our presentation at DigitalBound S4 in next year, actually, at Miami, United States. And yeah, everything that has a beginning has an end. Thank you for attending, and if there's any questions, yeah, you're here.
Thank you, Ali and Majid.
Thank you.
If you have questions, please do line up at the four microphones here in the halls. If you're leaving, please leave through the front door. And yep, leaving, please only through the front door. We have one question from the microphone up front.
Yeah, thank you for this interesting talk. I have one question.
Excuse me, if you're leaving, please do so quietly so we can still record the questions. Thank you.
My question is, how do you execute the code on the real PLC to write your multiplexing register or to manipulate the things there, get there and execute it?
So for multiplexing register, you still need to access root, because multiplexing is a requirement that you need to have to be in the kernel. Okay, so you can't do the multiplexing attack without having root access. Okay, but for the pin configuration attack, you can easily do that, because lots of this PLC, they build, so let's say it like that. So you have different I/O buses which is connect to the PLC I/O. And what they have different kind of buses which communicate over this pin configuration. So it's like there is some other abstraction layer built upon this concept. So what you do is that, for example, you can actually attack this abstraction layer instead of attacking directly to the configuration of the I/O, which you can't do it. And again, for pin multiplexing, you can't do it. You need root access, because it's a requirement that the kernel forced you to do that. So well, originally pin multiplexing happening at the boot time. So it's like usually bootloader does that. But if you want to do it and nothing stop you if you are in root, then you need to have root access for that.
Thank you. We have another question from the microphone in front here.
Hi. This is all very interesting. In the case where you have root, it seems like you'll always be able to win. But in the case where you're just using shellcode and exploiting the application process itself, it sounds like your shellcode is just calling mmap and kind of remapping the memory itself in process.
No.
Correct. So what are you doing then?
No, we don't always do a remap. As I said, for that answer, so for the demo which we had for the actual PLC, we don't do any mapping. We actually attacking another communication which built upon the for example pin control subsystem. So we are not directly targeting. We target other abstraction layer over the pin control subsystem. So that's how you are doing it. But as we said, another things you can do is that you can actually exploit the mapping already existing, already mapped IO addresses to do your attack. That's it.
So is that specific to the application itself? Like it has its own internal queue for these events, and you're just hijacking that internal queue of the process?
Yes. So for yes, if you don't have root access, yes. But if you do have root access, then you can do other things. And one thing which I heard a lot, and lots of people which legitimately ask questions, is that if I have root access, why would I want to do that, right? And the point is that because you don't consider that we have active defenses. So once you have, for example, you have some hooking protection within the PLC kernel, okay, then what you want to do? What is your alternative? Okay, so then what we are saying is that, okay, don't touch this. Don't touch anything with the software. What we go is that we just go and change the configuration of the pins there. And then we can actually achieve the same thing, for example, as Stuxnet did, okay, without actually exploiting the software, but just going underlying system and like just target the IO directly. That's when our attack makes sense, as we said several times. Yes, if you don't have defenses, if you have a backdoor password and no checksum, why would you go through this painful process to, I don't know, like manipulating the SOC registers to do that, right? But once you have active defenses, then it totally makes sense. Because then it's like you are much more limited to do your attack.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We have a question from the internet via our Signal Angel.
Yeah, Krell from the IRC asked if there's any evidence if this sort of attack is being used in the wild.
No, I'm not sure. I don't know. Maybe in another Snowden document.
We have a question from the microphone in the rear over here.
Yeah, did you see any changes in, for example, a GTEC boundary scan, or were such things not available on the processor?
Did I see?
GTEC boundary scan, so basically checking the status of all the pins around the chip.
No, there is nothing. But we're actually doing that now as a defense master student, Andra, who is doing right now this kind of stuff. But no, we didn't see such thing existing currently in embedded systems or RTOS or within the PLCs as well.
Another question from the microphone in the front.
Hi. When I code my PLC, is it viable to check the IO mode registers myself? So is this a viable defense?
No, because that's not the only way attacker does. So there are lots of ways attacker can target the IO configuration. One of the things you can do is that, for example, check how much or how often the configuration of the pins are changing. Because in actual physical process in a PLC, it's not that much. Okay, so if you have some kind of memory forensic stuff, which some people, for example, Mariano here in our talk sitting, so those kind of like memory forensic protections you have, you can actually spot that. But what you spot is a pin configuration attack. What about pin multiplexing? Because pin multiplexing, you just change a bit, and that's it. So it's just the 0 to 1, okay? And then it's totally disconnected. And it's like very, very little thing you can do actually to spot that. So you have to have another defense for pin multiplexing. And then what about, for example, if the attacker, for example, remapped the IO? So where you want to look now? Because Well, the attacker remap the I/O again, and then you have to hook the functions, which are, for example, remapping the I/O to spot that future attacks that the attacker remapped the I/O instead of having the already mapped I/O. So there are lots of more things, not just looking how much the configuration of the pins changed. I don't think it's enough. And I think there must be some push from the SoC vendors for having some interrupts, especially when the I/O fail, and especially I see in pin multiplexing stuff, because honestly, I see it's very surprising that the I/O is not available, and I think it's not expensive for the chip vendors to have at least an interrupt for pin multiplexing. Because in the pin multiplexing, you physically do not talk anymore with the I/O, but there is no feedback from the SoC saying, hey, what you requested to write to this I/O is not available. And that's crazy, okay. I think.
Do we have any more questions? OK, there is a question coming up on the front left microphone.
I'm wondering about that interrupt, because how should the pin function controller know that? If I switch from GPIO to I2C, for example, and that pin remains silent because there's no I2C transaction going on, how should the pin function controller decide if it's a wrong configuration or it's just a silent bus?
Yes, that's totally the...
So what should it feedback, and who should be listening to that?
The feedback at least can be, hey, the configuration changed now.
Yeah.
But there is no feedback even for that. So like as we said before, there is two problems in here. First is that once the configuration changed, there is nothing. There is nothing that the SoC tells you, hey, configuration changed. Okay. So that's one problem. And second is that, OK, once the configuration changed and the operation failed, there is no feedback telling you that, hey, the operation failed. OK? So at least what they can do is that they can't say that the configuration changed. At least, for example, driver or the software knows now that the configuration is changed, which they don't.
Well, I wonder if you have root access, you can probably made that information obsolete anyhow.
Yeah.
Another question from the same microphone in front.
Did you try it using safety PLCs, which have a seal level?
No.
So the IOs require to read back its value on some point. If it controls a relay, you have to feed back in PLC.
No. So that's true. You might have some PLCs that they do that, but it's still, for example, for both pin multiplexing attack and pin configuration, if the attacker remapped the I/O, what the for example, operator C or the PLC sees is a virtually mapped I/O. So the PLC runtime actually doesn't fail in writing to the virtually mapped I/O. So it is successful. Everything, the data in virtual memory is there. Okay, so once it checks, it is true. It is right. The values are right. But what is happening is that in the physical process, what the actual value is there is not there. Because in another register, which the PLC, such as PLC level Cs, like checking, for example, they're not checking the configuration of the I/O. They are checking actual value they've written, if it's there or not, which is there. But it's not reflecting to the physical process. That's why we call it memory illusion, because what you see is not actually is what is happening in the physical world.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
We have another question from the IRC via our Signal Angel.
Well, we don't have.
Or do we?
Yeah,
it's hard to read, maybe.
Just have a request for a microphone, and I'll search for it again.
Come again.
As you have to emulate the process of your PLC, and that works only for a couple of seconds, is there any way to exfiltrate the PLC program? Exfiltrate the program?
I didn't get it. Can you say it again?
I think he wants to know if you can dump the actual PLC code running.
Yeah, you can. But why would you do that? And if you are APT, I don't think it makes sense. You are delivering your final payload. You don't want to. If you are exfiltrating some data first as a recon, then yeah, you can do that. And I don't think it's impossible, especially with recent trend that you have RCE in the PLCs. I think this year, I think there was like four or five in different PLCs. And yeah, then it's totally possible to do that silently.
Okay. I think we're out of time. Yeah. Thank you very much, Ali Abbasi and Majid. Thank you.